that's right. Let's click it back on, and now that we've turned this over, put a new tape on, we'll start over and I'll ask you the question again. How do you make your shrimp salad?
All right, well, I boil my rock shrimp. Put a lot of that seafood seasoning in it. Then I drain them, and then I use lettuce. Now, there's two different ways you can make shrimp salad, but I use the lettuce, tomato, onion, and then I make a dressing out of a little oil, just a dash of vinegar, a little bit more of that seafood seasoning, and mayonnaise. And then you can make it like that, or you can make it with potatoes. Make mashed potatoes, just like you make mashed potatoes, but you're creamy. Seafood seasoning, onion, celery, all that, and then just chunk your shrimp up and let it get ice cold, and that's it.
I've never eaten the one with the mashed potatoes.
You haven't?
Never.
That is good.
Well, do you find that a lot of people make it that way in this area?
No. No, not too many of them. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, once they eat it, they will.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure of that. It sounds great.
You use mayonnaise with the mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. But you make regular mashed potatoes and chill them, and then add your shrimp, onion, celery, seafood seasoning. And there's also another salad that I have never eaten anywhere that I made because I had some, we had a party and I had a lot of leftover fish. I baked 100-pound fish. So there was, you know, quite a bit of it left over on the bone and all. So I thought, well, what am I going to do with that? There probably was 5 pounds of fish left. So I took onions and celery and that fish, chopped it all up. Then I boiled seashell macaroni, my seafood seasoning again, and mayonnaise. Have you ever had that?
Mm-mm. Seafood and pasta sounds great.
It is good. Mm-hmm. So then I think it was about in 75 or 76, somewhere around in there, I had started having a salad bar. And then I would make salads like that to put on the salad bar. Mm-hmm. But that was my own thing. I just tried it one time, and it just was so good. Oh, I put a little bit of sour cream in it.
And when you say seafood season, you're talking about that McCormick seafood?
Uh-huh.
You swear by that, don't
I do.
You, John? That's great.
I put it on eggs sometimes.
Without the seafood, it'd even be good, huh?
It is. It really is a good thing.
If you didn't live in Apalachicola, what do you think you'd miss the most by not living here?
The seafood.
The seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And the sea. Does the sea go together with you? Or?
Oh, yes. See, even here on the island, I mean, like I say, we travel for 26 years in service. Mm-hmm. And I think I like Turkey the best of any place that we've been because I had the water. But here, I can look out there. We looked all over to build a house. You can see the water there and my trees there. So I've got the best of two things. That's, I guess.
Why did you decide to settle out on St. George? I know you said that his family goes way back. His brother was born here.
Well, we still own the restaurant, and it just got so much for me that I'd get so tired, you know, but if I was home, and the 4 o'clock shift would come on, and they'd be calling every 15 minutes. I'd have to go down, you know, when I'd go down about 8 in the morning, work all day, and then I'd try to go home, you know, and have the evening off. But it didn't work out like that. I had 3 cooks and 2 dishwashers and 5 waitresses, and every 30 minutes I'd have to run up there to get something, do something, or help them with something. So we decided we'd build here on the island where it would get me away from the business. And they wouldn't be as apt to call me back every 10 minutes or something. Now that sounds...
You were living in Apalachicola at that time.
Right, uh-huh.
Right near the restaurant.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that sounds odd because it was my
business.
Yes, uh-huh. In fact, it really helped quite a bit. They'd think twice before they'd call me. Mm-hmm. And they'd think 3 times before I would have to come help them. Now, that sounds odd, me and owning the business and everything. It wasn't that, but 99% of the time, it was something that they could do if they would just stop and think, but they wouldn't think, you know, and they'd call me. But that's the reason we just wanted to get away from it. And I tell you, it's really odd living over here. When you hit that bridge, when you have to go to town or you go to Panama, you come back. I don't care if you go every day or once a week, but you just have a feeling when you come over that bridge and you look out. I don't know if you saw it or not, but you could see the Gulf, and
you relax.
You're home. You just feel so different.
Well, I can understand that. I surely can.
We've been over here 5 years, 6 years, I guess, and I still feel the same way. When I hit that bridge, you're here.
And see the butterflies. Tell me about the butterflies.
I don't know about them things.
Have they always been there?
No, it's just certain times of the year. Every year, sometime the last part of October, just before it's going to get cool. That's how you'll always know there's going to be a cool spell, because the butterflies, I think they're trying to commit mass murder or suicide or something.
That's what we thought.
Isn't that something?
It is, and they're on the bridge going to Apalachicola and this bridge.
I know.
They must be hatching from somewhere, though.
But why on the bridge?
I don't understand.
Of all the places.
Well, now you do see them on the island.
But
nothing like on the bridges. And you say they've only been there the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, now, I better take that back because, this bridge is only 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was built in 62 or something like that. And they might have been here, but we just didn't notice it or something.
But you've noticed them.
The last 5 years, I've really noticed them. And I think that's because sometimes I would make 4 or 5 trips to town. But it's always just before the cool weather comes.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's odd.
It is, because that's the first thing we noticed. Was David said to me, did you notice all the butterflies coming in? I said, not any. And so then later he said, don't you see the butterflies? I said, yeah, now I see them on the bridge, but there's none on 98 coming in here from Caravelle. I didn't notice any of them. I kept looking for the butterflies, but I didn't see them.
I tell you, I've wondered myself. And I've been going to ask somebody about it.
What variety are the butterflies?
I don't know.
Here we're way off our cooking, but I wanted to ask somebody about
well, the
butterflies because they intrigued me.
The whales beach themselves, don't they, down in South Florida? So maybe butterflies come up here to commit murder or suicide on the bridge.
How do you feel about paying that toll each time you come over?
Well, I don't like it because...
Do you get a special?
No.
No?
Uh-oh, we don't get... Everybody has to pay.
How long has that been levied there?
Since the bridge was started.
20 years ago.
I really resent it now because our bridge is in such bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like they ought to pay us to go across that bridge, to tell you the truth. But now, some days when I still had the restaurant, I'd have to make 4 trips to town.
Mm.
I mean, it really got expensive then. And now we still have to make 3. I have to pick up 1 grandson, take him to football. And I go back and pick up my granddaughter, take her to twirling. My husband's got to go in. He has to check out the post office and the town and everything, you know.
Open it up again.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, that's great. You got to leave at a certain time, do you, John?
No.
Okay. Well, I just didn't want to hold you. I know
I've
been here over an hour now, and I try to get through within an hour, but I think I still have a few things. I wanted to ask you about, you told me a little about mullet roe, and that was very interesting. And you told me how you fried it and how you made certain dips out of mullet and mullet gumbo, mullet stew.
Mullet stew.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
How about the gizzards in a mullet?
Oh, the gizzards.
Uh-huh. Do you use the gizzards?
Oh, yes. In fact, we fight over the gizzard.
You do fight
over
it?
If a mullet,
are there certain, now like there's a white and a yellow gizzard, is there
no,
a different
there's a
kind
white,
of gizzard? I mean roe,
right.
White and a yellow roe.
No, there's just one gizzard, and it's one gizzard per fish.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no describing gizzards. Have you had them?
No.
Well, you
I'm
do
going
this.
To.
Do the same way with the gizzard that you do with the shrimp. Put it in buttermilk. Then the self-rising flour, a lot of salt. You know, salt it first and then put it, after you take it out of the buttermilk, you salt it, or salt it before, whatever you want to do with it, and deep fry it, and they're good.
How long do you deep fry it?
Oh, probably longer than you do a shrimp. Let me put it that way, because I don't know exactly. Again, when it comes to the top,
oh, okay.
Then it's ready.
Do you turn it one time, or just let it come to the top and that's it?
No, I just let it come to the top, and then I scoop them out.
What do you serve with fried gizzards, mullet gizzards?
Same thing, cheese, grits, turnip greens. But you can never get enough gizzards, I don't think.
Really?
You can't go buy a pint of gizzards. If you did, I think they'd probably be... God, I don't know.
How much are gizzards? Can you go to the restaurant and find them on the menus?
I don't believe so.
You can only find them for home consumption.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, there was last night we stopped at a place over East Point. East Point, is this East Point here? And there was a bag of gizzards on ice there, a little Ziploc bag. And I said to David, these are mullet gizzards. He said, yeah. I said, it's the only fish that has a gizzard, I've been told.
Uh-huh.
Is this correct?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And we looked at them, and I thought, now, I wonder if they'd sell these. But I didn't ask the girl.
Oh.
It was at, the name of that was... I thought they were saying I thought Mrs. Keene was saying Rosetta, but it was Roselle's.
Uh-huh, Roselle's.
Uh-huh, that little place they were stopped.
Well, what they did probably, see, he had somebody cleaning fish.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, and then they took the gizzards out. Because I'd used to hire people to get the gizzard for me. The heck with the mullet, you know, sometimes
so
I just wanted to
get. So every part of the mullet is one of your favorite fish.
Yes.
The fish, the roe, and the gizzard.
Uh-huh. Now, a lot of people prefer the red roe. Mm-hmm. I don't. I like the white roe. And I like to take it. There's another way you can cook it with onions. And just sort of saute it with your onions and then have rice. And you take that juice and I put a little dash of soy sauce in it after you cook it, you know. That is real good, too.
Mm,
but now, red roe's good. Mm-hmm. Some people just...
Do you make a mullet dip?
Oh, yeah. In the seafood salad. If I've got leftover fried fish, usually here on the island, we'll all get together, fry a couple hundred pounds of mullet. I take the fried mullet that's left over, and I take that shell spaghetti and make my mullet salad.
Out of fried mullet?
Out of fried cold mullet.
Do you pull the fried part off?
Some of it. You don't have to be real good because it just makes it real good.
Mm-hmm.
You just pull it apart, take all the bone out of it, throw it in the food processor, throw your onion in there, your celery, same thing. And it just makes such a good...
I've often wondered what to do with the leftover fried fish.
Oh, that, try it. You must try that at home.
Now, what do you call that?
Seafood salad.
Seafood salad.
Mm-hmm.
So just use the fried fish. Well, I'm certainly never going to throw away another fried fish.
You'd be surprised here on the island. Nobody throws it away now.
Oh, that's great. Sounds like you are just the neatest cook. You're coming up with such great things to do with leftover.
Well, now that's, to me, being in the service all those years, that's the way we live.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to, really.
Did you find that when you were moving around that fish was still a staple of your diet always?
Always.
Bill always wanted it?
Always. We lived in Vermont, I guess about a year during the winter,
mm-hmm.
and they used to go down and smelt, a little bitty smelt. Fish is just part of our life.
How many times a week do you serve it?
Here?
Yeah, well, just, you know, like a weekly basis.
Two times a week. Maybe three times a week. All depends on what we want to do. Of course, being retired is nice, too, because I can go down there and catch me all the whiting I want for a meal.
You just take your rod and reel and go down?
Mm-hmm. You keep your rod and reel handy, and then...
What do you use? Zebco? What kind?
Ambassador.
An Ambassador?
In fact, I just went and bought me a new one.
What test line do you put on it?
Now let's see, we've been using a 10, but then we hung on to some redfish last week, so we switched over to 20, because I lost 4 redfish.
You like...
Now that's another fish. Do you know anything about redfish?
No, I don't. I was going to ask you about redfish. How do you prepare that?
Okay, you take it and you catch it first.
First, fresh, right out of the ocean.
Uh-huh. And then you clean it, you know, scale it and everything. And I split it right down the middle. And I take my onions and my celery and my seafood seasoning and lemon and pop it underneath the broiler. Oh, it's good.
How long do you leave it there?
Oh, maybe 10 minutes at the very longest. Or you can bake them. Open it up like that. And then I put all this onion and stuff on the top of it. That's it. They are They're good too.
So what do you serve with that?
Usually rice, maybe cheese grits, whatever.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Standard seafood.
Then there's a baked redfish. And if I've got a busy night or something, you know, and I don't want to stand here cooking, we'll get our redfish, and I'll just go ahead and season them, put them in aluminum foil, wrap it up real tight, put it in a refrigerator, and then about 30 minutes before we're ready to eat, just take them out of the refrigerator, throw them in a hot oven, let them go. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
But really, here, you can just eat anything.
There's no trash fish, huh?
Uh-uh.
Everything you've learned.
Well, I guess there is stingray and stuff like that.
How about octopus?
I don't, because we just don't catch enough of them. I've never tried it. That don't turn me on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were talking about squid. It was considered a trash fish at one time, too.
Well, so was shark.
Yeah.
Well, I cooked 5 pounds of shark 2 weeks ago, 8 pounds of shark. Had company over, so I try whenever we have company or card games or something, I just cook up a bunch of stuff. That shark was gone in 10 minutes.
Really?
And people didn't even know what it was. They thought it was chicken.
Do you like it?
Yes, very much.
Do you fry it? How do you prepare?
Sometimes I fry it. You take it, you have it filleted out in little hunks, and you roll it in mustard. Then you put it in the self-rising flour, and you deep fry it. Or you take it and you cut it in big fillets, or like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And you let it marinate overnight with Italian dressing, soy sauce, onion, garlic, you know, the same old stuff again, all chopped up. You have to let it sit about at least overnight, maybe 22 days or something like that. Then you lay it on a grill. And you get your grill good and hot. You don't do a thing to your grill. Your gas grill, or I cook it in here on my Gen Air.
Mm-hmm.
Just lay it on there. You let it cook about 3-4 minutes. Flip it over, another 3 minutes, and it's good.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. So if you don't marinate it, like you said, overnight, then you roll it in mustard and fry it.
And fry it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to marinate it if you go and fry it. But you cut it in thin stripes, or strips.
To fry it.
Yeah, and self-rising flour again. A little salt, pepper, basic stuff.
A lot of people eat shark now?
They're starting to. This is something in the last 2 or 3 years. St. George Island's a great party place. I mean, I think it's because we're all friends, and it's nothing to get a phone call and say, hey, we went out fishing, we caught 20 pounds of mullet or something, let's have fish fry. Everybody brings a dish.
Mm.
And then you hear one time, Gritty and Alice's, Andy and Lorraine, there's about 15 of us, and you just eat and eat and eat. But it is.
Well, it doesn't seem to bother you any. Fish is a great food for high protein. You can burn it up in a hurry.
You sure can. Or, let's see, there was something else. Anyway, about 2 years ago, if I want anything the good Lord put in the water, I think he meant for us to have it if we need it.
Yes.
But I don't even know where I got started on that shark from. I guess it was Chinese or something. Shark fin soup.
Yes.
That's been a staple for, 3,000 years? So if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Why not? Do you think maybe you introduced that tradition among the community here, or did somebody else was somebody else already catching and eating shark?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. I've never really heard of anybody eating it.
But you introduced it on St. George.
Uh-huh. like I say, we all get together and, you know, everybody's...
Did you catch that shark, or did somebody...
No, a friend of ours did. And, we have a shark. Now, Harry Arnold up here, he's a great one, too, to have different things, you know. And so every time they go shark fishing, well, they always ask me to figure out something to do with something when it comes to cooking.
Yeah.
So I figure out something to do with it.
So they brought you in a shark?
Uh-huh. And we tried it different ways.
Was it easy
but it's,
to clean?
I have no part of that. That's something I cannot do. I cannot clean a shark. I cannot clean a fish.
Really? You can't, huh? You won't.
I won't.
Right. I don't blame you.
I figure if I'm going to cook them, they can clean them.
Absolutely.
And if I know my husband well enough to know if I ever cleaned a fish, I'd be cleaning the rest of my life.
Self-preservation, huh? Well,
and there's another thing, too. Have you ever had gator tail?
Well, I've eaten that.
Oh, yeah. Lord, I love that. That is...
Do they catch a lot of alligators in the area?
No, not the law. Now, they used to. Now, I started eating gator tail, gosh, probably in 8th or 9th grade when the blacks, when we first came here, mm-hmm. we had this one cook, Daisy, that she'd just bring all kinds of stuff out there. You know, I'd eat possum, all mm-hmm. that stuff that the blacks... And I just love gator tail. So then every time, you know, somebody kill a gator, they'd bring me a bag of gator. Mm-hmm. I'd fix it.
How'd you fix it?
Fry it.
Fry it.
Just slice
little
it.
Little fillets?
Uh-huh.
Did you marinate it?
No.
Or roll it in anything special?
Salt and pepper and the self-rice and flour. Make sure it's ice cold where that flour will stick to it real good. And it.
But you know, you can buy gator from
uh-huh.
and
legal I do.
Sources.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have it on the menu in the area here?
No, no, I did. I think it was back in 74, 75, the state sent me a permit to mm-hmm. sell it. And I tried it for 2 or 3 weeks. Local people would come out and eat it, but your tourists wouldn't.
Yeah. And well, did you find your tourist wanted one thing and your local people wanted another? That was
uh-huh.
like gator. You didn't sell enough gator tail to keep it on there all the
no.
time or stock it.
And
but if you had it on there, the locals would eat it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The
same
tourists.
Way with the squid. Mm-hmm. To tourists, and I know this too from traveling, you can't tell a tourist how good something is. Or you can't say, hey, try this gator tail. Because they're going to say, I'm not going to eat no gator tail. Where your local people know what's good. Now, if you can get them to eat it, then tell them what it is. But you can't do that in a restaurant.
Yeah, that's true.
But now, I did that with shark here at my house. I fixed the shark and didn't tell anybody it was shark. Just put it out there,
well,
you know.
Well, did you ever tell them it was shark?
Yeah. When they'd ask me, oh, my God, this is so good. Well, that's shark. What kind of shark? Oh, my God.
Regular kind.
Yeah.
The man eats kind. You did tell me that for the seafood festival, you're going to do that shrimp gumbo. What if people were doing a fundraiser, like in my area, they'll do what we call chicken purloin. Is there a certain thing that you can expect to see for fundraising organizations, like if the PTA is doing a fundraising or a church is doing a fundraising and doing a food
mm-hmm.
serving? What is it that is commonly done in this area?
Fried mullet, cheese, grits, and coleslaw.
That's good.
That's every fundraiser.
No hush puppies?
Oh, yeah, hush puppies.
And hush puppies.
That's a staple with mullet.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one, and gumbo is another one. That's
shrimp
another.
Gumbo,
mm-hmm.
but not oysters, no.
Oh, yeah, oysters on a half shell, but see, we're not used to paying.
Yeah, I know. So, but mullet is something that people would go and buy as
oh,
a fundraiser.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fried mullet. Now, what would a plate of fried mullet, cheese grits, hush puppies, and greens?
Mm-hmm.
Greens.
Yeah.
What would you expect to pay for that if you were...
At a fundraiser?
Uh-huh, at a fundraiser.
I'd say $3.50.
Mm-hmm. So that's the common thing for fundraising and foods around. It's great.
At one time, it used to be shrimp gumbo, oysters on a half shell, but the cost is so prohibitive now that you just, you can't give it away.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in 1970, oysters were $8 a gallon, and then they went to $12 a gallon. Then when I sold the hut, they were $18 a gallon. Mm-hmm. Now I understand they're $25 a gallon.
If you bought a what I would call a croaker bag full of oysters or a bushel of oysters, what would they cost?
I think right now they're getting around $17.
Is that all?
Mm-hmm.
And how many oysters could you shell out of a bushel?
To a standard gallon of oysters is 250. Now that's what it was in 90, because I...
you used to count them. I can imagine
I
doing
counted
that.
Them. I really have, just to see how many... Well, when you have the restaurant, you've got to... And I
Absolutely.
Didn't have any help. All I did was... myself. So I did count out the oysters, one by slimy things, and there was 255 oysters to a gallon of oysters.
Gallon.
Standard.
Standard size
mm-hmm.
oysters.
Now your selects were a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But and I have double checked that throughout the years, two or three different times, and it was always that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'd never thought about how many oysters does it take to do a gallon? But I'm sure there's many oyster shuckers that may have done that.
Oh, yes, I imagine so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what they do, yeah, in fact, I had some working for me, and they count the shell, so the bottom part of the shell. So it is standard 250.
So. I picked up a recipe book in town, this old Apalachicola recipes. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this one?
Not this one.
Well, I guess my question I want to ask you is, if you were putting together a recipe book for the Apalachicola area, what would you include in it?
Scalloped oysters, mm-hmm. Shrimp stew, which is not shrimp stew, but it's, I had it at some fancy place. I couldn't believe it.
Now, have we talked about shrimp stew? We talked about shrimp gumbo. We didn't talk about shrimp stew.
Well, the thing about it is, everywhere you go now, they have it. It's the same basic recipe that I make, but they call it stir fry or something like that. All it is onions and celery, seafood seasoning again. You saute your shrimp, then you saute that, and then I put soy sauce in it, add a little water, let it cook down, put it over rice. I've called that shrimp stew for 55 years, but it's au fondue or something or other.
So you'd use shrimp stew, scalloped oysters.
Uh-huh. Seafood salad.
Seafood salad.
And gumbo.
And gumbo. And you'd have to tell them how to fry a mullet.
It's
I know you think it's not important, but how you fry a mullet in this area is important because it may be that somebody does it just a little bit different. Do you smoke mullet?
No, I don't
care.
Do you
like smoked mullet?
No, I really don't. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a great one. I love to cook outside like Bill's family did. They didn't. Over on 65, they had a wood stove in the house, but they did the majority of their cooking outside. Same thing as our gas grills, but this was wood, you know.
So they just moved outside with a wood stove and cooked?
Right.
How neat.
But as far as, I'm just not too good on smoked stuff for
Bill
some
reason. Bill doesn't like to smoke either, mm-hmm. evidently.
Now, I like smoked ham, things like that.
Mm-hmm. But fish, no.
No. Mm-hmm.
But do they do a lot of it in this area, smoking mullet?
Yes. Well, no, not really. Now, there's Joe Nichols that has just started, and I think he's going into it pretty good. But I don't know. It might be a coming thing, but I just don't think people care that much for it.
But you have never seen it in your years of growing up around here, a lot of smoked mullet.
No. In the past 4 or 5 years, your bars... I think the same man as Joe Nichols been smoking mullet to sell to bars. It is a good snack when you're sitting in a bar drinking beer, you know, like peanuts. All right, you got to smoke mullet there. 9 times out of 10, you're going to try one. But I don't think there's too many people that would go to a place just to get smoked mullet.
Well, we live inland. And I've contended that the farther you go inland, the more they smoke because of the ice situation.
Right. Uh-huh.
Somebody said, no, I don't think that's so. I said, no, I'm going to ask that question when I go to Apalachicola. Is smoking an up thing, and has it always been in this area?
Sure has. Well, you get your seafood fresh here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you go up to Georgia, mullet. Now, I'll tell you this about mullet. Apalachicola is the only place I'll eat mullet. Because there is such a difference in it. And even you catch a mullet here in this bay.
Flip this over. Let's get back to what you were telling me about the mullet.
All right. Mullet feed off the bottom of the water. You can eat a mullet that's caught here on this island. What they call island mullet, it is delicious. You can go 6 miles over there to Apalachicola, to that marshy area and the river, and I can't eat them. They taste muddy. They pick up whatever they eat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's why they have a gizzard, isn't it?
I guess so.
So they can crack pebbles and things, like a chicken, you know. A chicken can...
But it's the sandy island, and I guess the salt from the Gulf or whatever, and it's just... And the mullet itself, when you catch them and you clean them, is firmer. The mud mullet, the river mullet, are soft.
Mm-hmm. the meat has a different texture.
The meat from an island mullet that's caught here on St. George Island is a silvery, and then it'll get a little pink, you know, but it's a silver color. A river mullet is a dark, dark red. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely pick it up and just look at it and tell that
it's... Does it smell different too?
Uh-huh. It's got a muddy smell to it. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I wouldn't eat mullet nowhere but Apalachicola.
Well, it's out of the bay here.
Out of...
Not in the river.
Not in the river.
And that's a freshwater river.
It's a freshwater river, but there's a lot of
there's
salt
a
that's going...
It's a muddy bottom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a muddy bottom. Mm-hmm. But I only eat mullet from this island mullet.
Well, my husband's a fisherman, and he fishes in the Suwannee River a lot. And he swears that they're the best catfish in the world that are caught out of the Suwannee River because it's clear running
water.
Well, they
are. They are.
And he won't eat them out of lakes. He won't eat fish out of a lake at all. Just like you, he can tell the difference.
Uh-huh.
Just bring it to me and I'll eat it sometimes if I'm fish hungry. Let's see. I want to ask you, have you noticed... And, of course, you're a good one to answer this because you've traveled all over the world. Have you noticed a traditional food that is used for weddings or maybe even at funerals in this area?
Well,
of course,
here,
I know the wedding cake is...
Now, they have what they call a lane cake that they make here. Do you know about that?
My mother-in-law makes it. She's...
Okay, well... the black people, my mother back in the 40s would buy the sugar and everything and give it to them, you know, and they'd make this lane cake. But now I haven't had one of those, I don't think, in 10, 15 years.
Used wine and raisins and coconut, and it had like 7 layers, thin layers.
That's it.
She makes one every Christmas. So see, that's a tradition in our family already. I've learned to make it. She makes it mostly, but I have her recipe, and it's something that I would like to pass on to my daughters. So is that a holiday type
holiday
thing?
Holiday, strictly holiday.
But do they use it at weddings also?
Yes, quite a few wedding cakes. Your older families will have that cake for
okay,
a wedding.
Okay, so they'll make those thin layers and put the raisins and coconut and nuts in it, and then will they cover that with the traditional frosting?
It's not a frosting. It's more like a...
I know it's a filling.
But they cover it like a glaze.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to think. Mm-hmm. Maybe an orange glaze with a little rum. Oh. Grand Marnier. Now, this is how this Juanita used to make it. And it would just glaze it, but the filling part would be the rum. Rum?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I am not good on desserts, but that is... Your older families
still have that.
Do
you see it at church functions in this area? Always a lane cake, more than one probably.
Yeah, really you do. Carrot cake is another staple, I think. And let's see, what else have I noticed a lot of? Well, actually, this is not as much dessert as it is hard down eating. Country. I don't know why, but you know, up north they have a tendency to go in more for desserts than they do here. Here it's either the lane cake for something really special, Christmas, wedding, or a big funeral. Mm-hmm. There'd always be one or two lane cakes. Your heavy fruit cake.
The dark one?
Mm-hmm. Very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it was so much.
Filled with everything.
Yeah. But not the candied fruit now. That's something that I've noticed here in the north, or even when we go back visiting or something, our fruit cake has got a lot of the cherries, and but here they don't. Mostly it's nuts, pecans, walnuts, and stuff like that, and a lot of raisins, but not all that...
Not candied fruits.
The cherries. Now that's odd, but it really holds true.
And
down
have
here.
You learned to do that for your family?
Yeah. I wouldn't dare put a piece of orange or unlike that
fruit. They wouldn't eat it.
No, they wouldn't.
My family, our children doesn't like raisins, so I have to omit the raisins, but I love raisins, and, you know, I was brought up with the fruit cake with lots of raisins in it, but... You know, you,
what
you
about
do,
the candied fruit? Do you use it too?
I have. Yeah, they do.
The only time I can use it is like for decoration, and if I make
on
a fruit
the top,
on the top.
So they can pick it off. Yeah, I know that.
But now that's not my youngins. That's my husband and father-in-law. And
but so. That's the way they do it in this area.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a nut cake then. So they use lots of varieties of nuts. Raisins.
Nuts.
Any coconut in there? No?
No, not so much.
Just seasoning then. All kinds of cinnamons and spices goes in. A lot of dough holds that together?
Yeah, well, that's what I call heavy.
Would you include that in a recipe book that you were putting together for this area? Now, I know that...
If I was making it for this area alone,
the
yes.
The Lane cake would go in it. And the nut...
the
holiday cake,
southern fruit cake, I guess is what you'd call it, because that's a. I tell you something else I know about that, and I just happen to think about it. Bill's family, aunts, you know, now they made it, but this stems again to your region. They didn't have the ovens. What they had was the big cast iron things, so they would make this heavy dough or cake or whatever, put it in an iron skillet, pop it in this old wood stove, and that was the best cake I ever ate in my life.
Like a Dutch oven they cooked it in.
Yeah. But I guess that comes from...
What kind of cake was that? That nut cake?
It's what they call a fruit cake. And then, too, they had... there's pear trees over there. In fact, I still get the pears. And they'd make a pear cake.
Sand pears? What kind of pears?
Sand pears. Well, we had some pineapple pears and sand pears, but mostly sand pear. And then you'd make preserves out of that. And I remember a lot of times going over there, and they make what they call Johnny cake, because we'd always ask them to make us some Johnny cake. And they made a sweet dough, but they fried them like pancakes. And then they would have the sand pear that they had cooked down and put
a filling.
Sugar and all in it, I still do the same thing, a little lemon. But they'd make these little cakes, and then cover it with that pear, and then stack them up, and that was Johnny cake. But now up north, Johnny cake was entirely different. Wasn't that.
Like that at all.
I remember going over there, and they'd fry them in those old, heavy,
cast iron.
Yeah, I got a bunch of, that's what I love to cook with.
Oh, listen. You know, they found out that women used to get a lot of their iron. That one reason why we're iron starved is because we don't cook in that standard iron, you know.
Well, I tell you, when I bought the hut, I couldn't afford to go out and buy restaurant stuff, you know. And my mother bought a set of wherever when she got married in 1922. She had that there. And what she had left of it, you know, and I used that. Then I used the old cast iron stuff that Bill's family had given me from up there that's got to be 70 years old. Now, my daughter's trailer just burnt down 3 weeks ago, I guess. So she lost everything she had. So I gave her all of my old iron stuff so she can use it.
She doesn't know how lucky she is.
That's right. And see, just take a look around the corner in there if you don't think I cook. That's all I really now talking about cooking in old timey cooking. Well, dove season just started, but I've got the two kids, so we can't go.
So he's a fisher and a hunter.
Yeah, well, whatever we want to do. But we have this property up there, the old place that they
now,
got.
Where is that?
It's up on Road 65 going towards Sumatra.
Okay.
It's about halfway up there.
Up there around Tate's Hill.
Yeah, Well, it's just a little ways from Tate's Hill. But out of the original 100 or 300 acres, I think we probably have 35, 40 acres left. It's got a creek in it, you know.
And that's where Bill was raised.
That's where.
How nice.
That's where his father was raised and his grandfather was raised. But we've got this old camper that we bought. It's an old one. It's an antique that he's restored.
That's so nice.
But we take that thing up there. Now, during hunting season,
we'll have probably 30 people. We have a little well up there. We have electricity, but I didn't want it. And I take all my big old, and we cook for 3 weeks. That's all I take bread, flour, a chicken, a ham, and the rest of it comes from up there. And we might have 35 people tonight, might have 50 tomorrow night, but you never know. But they all bring me stuff, but I could not cook it if it wasn't for that old black cast iron stuff.
So they're coming up to go hunting with Bill. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're going hunting, and then we all get together and we eat. Everybody will bring something, you know. Maybe they'll shoot some ducks. So I'll take 4 or 5 ducks, and I got this great big round thing. Build me a fire outside. We've got a little charcoal. I wish I had time to take you up there, because you would really love it. But we got a fire pit. And then we build the fire. So say I got 5 ducks. And then I take my old black pot, and I cut my onions and celery up, put it in there, a little bit of butter or something, and water. Then I clean the duck. And I got a rack that goes in it. Now, God knows, this thing must be 75 years old if it's a day.
It was Bill's parents?
Uh-huh. Bill's grandparents.
Grandparents cook like that.
Uh-huh. They did, right up until 1945.
Well, aren't you so lucky to have learned how to do
yeah,
that from
them? But anyway, you take these ducks and you put them on this rack, and then you put the lid in them. You set it right down in that fire. You push the fire up all around it. Mm-hmm. You let it go probably 2.5 to 3 hours. You take your ducks out, and then you take your little flour, put it in that stuff, that whatever you call it down there, make your gravy. And it is, it's mm-hmm. just something that you can't, but I couldn't cook it in the oven like that, don't think.
You'd probably mm-hmm. not get the same taste as being outside.
And in that old black
mm-hmm. stuff. It sounds great. It must be one of your grandchildren.
Yes.
Let me try one more time to ask you a few more recipes that you would include in your cookbook. We talked about the desserts a little while ago. And of course, I know that we talked about greens and cheese grits and mullet. And is there any other special thing that you can think about? The banana pudding, I'm sure we'd put it in there as a family favorite. Mm. Any other thing that comes to the top of your head that you'd put in that cookbook about?
Just, no. Scalloped oysters we got,
mm-hmm.
yeah. No, not right offhand. I can't think anything else, really. My mind went blank.
Well, we've covered a lot of subjects in quite a while, and I've asked you a lot of questions. So I guess I'll let it be your turn. Is there anything that you'd like to ask me, or that I can clear up for you on what we're doing this project for?
There is one thing I'd like to know. Okay. What makes a mullet jump?
I don't know now. You're asking me something that I know nothing about. We'll have to ask Bill that question. But
somebody with a state somewhere could probably answer that.
What did you think about when they were trying to change the name of mullet to Lisa?
I laughed.
Yeah. I'll write it down, Joan, and I'll ask that question to a lot of people. I mean, it's something that I'd like to know, too.
Everybody
a lot of fish do jump, though, don't they?
Well, salmon and all, when they go to whatever they do, when they go to
spawn
or mm-hmm. something. But mullet just jump for the fun of jumping, I think.
Just happy being in the water, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You see them a lot in the bay just jumping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you like least about living here?
Least?
Yeah, I know what you told me you like most, but I don't think I asked you that. If there is anything, if there's not.
The changes that the government's making, that's what I like the least about
it.
Like
the least.
And I think everybody comes to Apalachicola because they love it. But they move here, and in 6 or 7 months, they're trying to change it. Now, I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. We have a way of life here that you just don't find too many places.
Mm-hmm.
And this...
Is it that they're trying to improve, you think, or...
Yes.
What is it that you've noticed they want to do, first of all? Are they critical, or what?
The...
Newcomers, are we talking about?
The newcomers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we live in Apalachicola because we want to. And I know it's hard to go to Panama City shopping and all that. And I do have to go over there, and I do have to shop over there. But we are here because we want to. So why try to make Panama City out of it?
And you like it because it's a nice bedroom community. You'd like to stay that type of community and not have bowling alleys or shopping malls.
And Hardee's.
And Hardee's, no fast food chain. Well, that was one thing we noticed, no fast food chain in town. And well, it's just a way of testing to see if we really are recording.
Well, you know, that's
that
just...
I was struck by that.
Well, I tell you, our seafood here, when you come to Apalachicola and you get it, and I used to get upset too. You know, maybe we couldn't get oysters one day, maybe, you know. But I'd rather be out than to serve something that is not good or... But it, a fast food place cannot cook seafood the way we serve seafood. So you get a Hardee's or you get a whatever, Captain D's, it's not going to be the same. So if you want Captain D's, go to Panama and get it.
Yeah, well, I think probably the genuine hospitality of the people in Apalachicola is another thing that makes things taste a lot better. Yeah. I have found that you're the most open people I've ever dealt with in a long, long time. You've just been really gracious to
us. Well, it's a wonderful bunch of people here, really.
Yeah, we have found that. They're great.
But I tell you what, you can't find out from none of them what makes the mullet jump, because everybody's got their own. And I want to know the scientific.
Well, what do you think makes them jump?
I think they're just glad to be in Apalachicola.
Oh, well, I think that's probably so. I'm really trying to work on my husband to make sure he'll come down here this next week, because we've got, do you know Vivian Thompson, the lady?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's her house on the other end that we're living in. We're getting some good stuff here. I forgot to turn it back on, so let's talk. Well, we will talk a while, but we'll
You know, if you keep mullet ice down, it's good. Oh, maybe the third day you can still eat it, but it's not. But anything like that you catch right here on the island can eat the same day, and that whiting is good. That's as good as a mullet. Maybe. And then, too, if you do get some, ice it down, your mullet now, or your whiting. Get your grease hot, and then just dip that in salt and pepper, and then your cornmeal, put it in that real hot grease. Is that the way you cook it?
That's the way I fry fish.
And then when you take it out, stand it up. Get you a pan, you know, have a deep pan, and stand it like this here. So all that grease will go down through the side. If you lay it down flat, but try that.
And you know what they use in our area a lot? Instead of a platter, they go down to the local grocery stores and get, you know, how beer comes packaged. They get those shallow boxes and put a grocery bag in the bottom and stand them up in there. That's how they used to serve them. When my husband fries fish outside in the yard, and we do a lot of frying outside because I don't like to fry them in the house. I do the, you know, grits and hush puppies, and he goes outside and fries fish. But he always goes down and gets those little shallow boxes and use them for
the same
as platters.
That's the best way in the world to meal them.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting every place getting beer boxes.
Isn't that wonderful?
And then garbage bags, food bags or paper towel. But I learned a long time ago to stand them fish up on the side, not ever lay them down flat. Good. Somebody else knows that.
Well, see, that's a folkway that you pass on.
I guess so, but it sure makes a difference in the taste of the fish.
It's funny how in some regions you don't see that, but in others you do, Well, I think we've used a lot on this tape, and I've asked a lot of my questions here, and you've been so nice to answer every one of them. I've gotten more than what I came for. Might have to come back over and ask you about certain recipes if we decide to use those, but other than that, you basically told us what we need.
This book, I just glanced through it. I've got the 1928s and 20s anyway, the late book, or And there's good recipes in this book. There really is.
In that one, right?
Uh-huh. This is, a lot of them are the old book, come from the old book.
But see, I'm interested in what you're doing now over here. Those are great recipes out of the old book, but I'm more interested in what you're serving now, and you answered a lot of those questions. The restaurants would also be a good source, but, I mean, you're cooking now for family and a lot of friends.
So that, I'm looking at the names here. A lot of these names are the old, old, old people.
Well, it's fun reminiscing with books like that, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I get mine. I've got three of them.
What's your favorite food that your grandmother fixes? This is the 8-year-old granddaughter who just came home from school. 9 years, she tells me. She's 9 years old. And what is your name?
Levitica.
Say it again.
Levitica.
Levitica, what's your last name?
Glass.
Levitica Glass. And she's just arrived home at grandmother's from school. And I ask her again, what's your favorite food that grandmother fixes?
Turkey.
Turkey? How does she do it? Mm-hmm. Does she bake it?
She grills it.
Oh, you grill turkey?
I put it in the gas grill, put the lid down on it. I don't know. It's not smoked. But,
but it has that charcoal flavor. Do you use charcoal in the gas grill?
No, just a gas grill. And I let it cook for about 6 hours with that lid on it.
Do you go in there and turn it off? Just put it in there one night and it's done
on a rack.
Next morning.
Uh-huh.
And the juices cook
down into a pan, and then I take that out and make a gravy with it.
Sounds great, and sounds simple too.
It is. Something you don't have to stand there and watch.
Do you make a dressing to go along with that?
No, not when I do it like that.
Oh, you just slice it and have it as a entree?
Yeah. Have mashed potatoes, rutabagas. Rutabagas has to go with turkey.
Really?
Yeah.
Rutabagas. Do you grow rutabagas?
No.
How do you cook the rutabagas?
Boil them.
And boil them?
Just boil them till they get tender with pork fat or seasoning. That's it.
Rutabagas, and what else did you say you serve with turkey?
Mashed potatoes. And the gravy, rutabagas, turnip greens. She's a green eater.
Is she?
She loves her turnip greens.
I like mustard.
She grows squash and peppers.
Uh-huh. What kind of squash do you grow?
Yellow squash.
The yellow crooknecks or smooth?
Crookneck.
Crookneck.
Now, you know how I cook them?
No, I want to know.
All right, I do my squash and onion. And I put them in a frying pan with bacon fat or salt pork fat. And I let them in bell pepper. But I don't put my pepper. Let them cook. Then I put my pepper on so it stays real bright and green. Then I layer it with cheese.
Glorified squash, sounds like.
Let it just melt down. Oh, that's another one. That's good. People just love that.
Would you include that in your cookbook?
Yes, I sure would. I usually put, one red pepper and then put that on the top of it. Put the lid on it. Just to give it some color now. But that's a good recipe. People really like it.
Any special way you fix turnip greens or mustard?
No, salt pork.
Salt pork always.
And
you wouldn't think about cooking them without seasoning.
Oh, no.
No?
Nope.
Is that the way his grandmother cooked them?
That's it.
So you've learned to cook from his family a lot.
Yes. Now, with collard greens, I use pork, hunks of pork. And that's about the only difference.
Salt pork for any other greens.
Take them off.
Well, Joan, again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us about the traditional foodways here in Apalachicola. Well, I know there's a lot more, but we've spent a lot of time doing this, and I want to thank you again for
You're certainly welcome. I enjoyed it.
We may come back again and talk with you if you don't mind.
Well, anytime. I'm just so busy, I just stay here all day. That retirement does have advantages.
Oh, yes, I'm sure it does. Well, it looks like you have a lot of hobbies that keep you busy, though.
I do.
I'm sure that I want to go by the hut and see all the neat things they have on their menu before we leave here.
I hope they still do.
Yeah, well, I think it'd be nice to do that.
It's a beautiful place.